Hi guys, welcome back to the Hour of Conversation. So today's topic is going to be on mental health in terms of perception and how it relates to different aspects. So I actually have a guest with me here today, and I will introduce her in just a second. But the point of today was just to dive into, once again, what we do to open different perspectives and broaden your horizon just a bit to start talking about possibilities that we might want to push for society, or directions that we should probably head in. As I've said multiple times, the point of this podcast and the process of me developing my business was just centered around, self-care within yourself, and that relates to mental health. During this podcast, for those of you who were just listening to this episode for the first time and are not familiar with the Hour of Conversation, we talk a lot about social society and certain issues or topics that arise during that, as well as the natural environment. For my business choice era, our definition of sustainability is to, promote sustainability within yourself so that you can give back to the natural environment. As much as we are focused around the natural environment and making life a bit better on the planet and for the environment in terms of positive impact, I also think it's very important to focus on yourself as a person, and mental health is a big part of that, self-care and all of that jazz. So in terms of that, that's what we're leaning on today. So my guest that I have with me today is named Rochelle Richards. I will link all her handle stuff, but she can be found on social media. I'm sure she'll share her handle. And I'll put it in the description box as well as her website. So Rochelle actually is my mother. So I have the privilege of having a conversation with my mom today. So you guys can hear that and how we kind of talk about stuff from time to time. She is an art psychotherapist. Sure, she'll go into detail about her qualifications. I kind of don't know what they are, I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of big fancy words and abbreviations. But so I'm just going to ask her some questions. We're going to have a dialogue and go back and forward. She'll give you some history as to what she does, how long she's been doing it, and all of that type of stuff, what her business is, and then we'll hop in. So welcome, Rochelle / mother.
Thank you, Kaya, for inviting me today. Let's talk.
Okay, so can you give us a background as to where you started, where you are now, what your business is?
So I have a BFA in art education, fine art education. And then I decided that I wanted to do more with art because I like to paint. And I knew at the time that the feeling that transcended when I was doing artwork had to be a reason for it. This was in the early 2000s. And I came across a career in art therapy and decided, why not go for it? So my master's is in art therapy. Received it at Derby University in the UK. Art therapy basically takes therapeutic process and intertwines it with creative modalities such as painting, drawing, crafting, sewing, sculpture, all sorts of things. We kind of meet the client where they are, and we use that as a stepping stone to start conversations towards repairing or self-discovery.
Okay. Okay, lost my train of thought there. Hold on. So that's what you do. I guess where you hoping to land in terms of your business? Like, what's next?
My business. I did forget to mention that I'm the owner of CAF Bermuda Art Therapy Services. And at the moment, we kind of just work with children. I specialize in childhood trauma, teenagers and children. And I guess moving forward with the business, we kind of want to jump into working more with families together, because although the clients come to me, the children come to me, it really doesn't help if the children are working on themselves or the issues that have brought them to me, if the family isn't working with them as well. So we're actually becoming a wraparound services where we're supporting families as well, so that the entire family can work together.
Okay, sounds good. Is that a focus on mom or mom and dad, grandparents, just, I guess, the immediate family that they reside with, or does it extend?
It could be the immediate family, more so the nucleus that spends the majority of the time with the client, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. Okay. Sounding a bit blue. We're sort of energy today. We just got back. It's evening time in Bermuda, and we've had a busy day, but we wanted to definitely give this episode a go, because it's a topic that I feel like is, because of how the sequence of episodes have gone, it was just next in line and bound to happen anyway. So, yeah, we just wanted to get it done. I just wanted to point out, though, that that Rochelle is, I don't know, she sticks to whatever ethics or guidelines they have, so I don't receive therapeutic services from my mother, because she says something about something that it just conflicts, or I don't know if you want to explain it.
It's unethical to provide therapeutic services for people that you socialize with, and Kaya is my daughter, so it's unethical for me to provide therapy to her. So I have directed her to some good people that I know.
Yeah, so that was just to point out that although we're having this conversation, and you know, she is a art psychotherapist, that she doesn't do it on her children, which sometimes can be a bit of a, you know, a bummer for me, but I get it completely. So yeah, I don't have any sort of interest in this, just as a disclaimer. So yeah, but the point of today, we can jump into the question. So as I said, we're going to touch on mental health in terms of perception. So my first question for Rochelle is, what is something I've been thinking about for a while, and I don't know if it's, I don't want to say a stupid question, because no questions are stupid questions. But is there a difference between a therapist and a psychologist? Sorry. So is there a difference between a therapist and a psychologist?
The only difference is the education. So a psychologist has a doctorate's degree. They tend to do more assessments and testing. And some psychologists also can provide medication. They can do prescriptions. Where a therapist comes to the practice from a therapeutic standpoint, and sometimes from a holistic standpoint. And most therapists would need to be trained at the master's level. So that's the only difference. I think, well, for myself as an art psychotherapist, I still do assessments and things like that. So we do assessments, but they're on a different level than a psychologist would do. So that's the only difference, really.
Okay, so is that kind of saying that if I put that in layman's terms, a therapist provides you with an end goal and works through it, and a psychologist is more of a testing, you know, academic side of it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So the psychologist is the academic side, and the therapist is the practical side to help you work through whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So that makes sense. Definitely interesting. I didn't actually know that before. All right. So I think that definition kind of puts my next question as irrelevant or a bit weirdly worded. But my next question is, how do you feel about the idea, or how realistic is it to normalize children having a psychologist the same way that they sign up to have a pediatrician?
You mean normalizing? You mean that it's not it's anything to be ashamed of? That's what you mean?
Not necessarily. So normalizing in terms of making it so, because we're talking about mental health in terms of perception, and we're going to get into the perception side of it in a minute, but just in terms of it not being something normal, it's not normalized to have people talk about their mental health and emotions. And in terms of children, people not seeing that children do have childhood trauma or things that they can express, that doesn't necessarily mean that they need a therapist, but maybe somebody to keep an eye on it so that it doesn't develop into needing that extent of help, I suppose. So, and so when you have a child, the born, you immediately register with a doctor to have a pediatrician. So how realistic, or how do you feel about the idea of having a therapist or psychiatrist just being the same process, along with signing up for a pediatrician?
My opinion, I wouldn't think that it would be necessary for that to take place. Although you don't need something to happen in order to seek the services of a psychologist or a therapist, because it is about getting in touch with your emotional intelligence. So I think possibly around teenage years, it might be something that a parent can seek to do, because those are the years where young people are actually trying to find themselves. So I guess about 11, it could possibly be a good idea for a parent to seek the services of a psychologist or a therapist just to help guide a young person into adulthood. And that would be a good idea. But as a baby at birth, when you're looking for a pediatrician, that might not actually be necessary at that point. Unless there is some concern around something else.
Okay. My next question being, because I think I've heard you talk about this in a seminar before. I mean, COVID being a thing, everybody works out of home. So sometimes my mom does workshops or gives presentations, you know, I'm in the next room or something, and I overhear her having her conversations with the world, which is actually a pretty cool thing, proud of her when it comes to that. But the question related to that was, like, how early does childhood trauma start, or, you know, when can you start to see trauma develop within a person?
Well, trauma is a personal experience, and it doesn't necessarily mean that the child is not an impactful event, doesn't necessarily need to happen. And it depends on the situation, because it might be, okay, an example, that a child goes into a grocery store or somewhere and something startles the child. That simple act of startling could begin the process of a traumatic event. I don't know if that made sense, but it doesn't have to be a car accident or domestic violence or anything like that, because, like I said, it's a traumatic event is something that happens to an individual based on that individual's experience with the world. So you could be walking in the forest and you just happen to get out of the sight of your child, and then all of a sudden something's triggered, and that becomes a childhood, that becomes a traumatic event.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I think I was trying to steer her in the direction of talking about what I wanted her to talk about, and she didn't do that, which is fine. So I do remember you mentioning, so I'll just outright ask you instead of trying to, because that was a good explanation, and I definitely hope you guys took that on, because that made a lot of sense to me. I guess it's the same thing as having multiple children in a household and them having different experiences within that household of growing up. Okay, but that's a whole
other conversation. So that would be a whole other conversation, because when you have siblings, you have different experiences, because the siblings enter the family at different stages. And during those stages, different things might be happening within the family nucleus. So an older child might be remember horrible experiences if the parental figures have just gotten married and they're just still trying to figure each other out. So it might be a little bit unstable. But the younger siblings might experience that family differently, because at that point, when they entered the family, the parentals may have been through their own therapy or anything such as that and found a way to get along. So the family nucleus is now happier and things are getting, you know, things are better. So siblings hold different memories within a family.
Okay, that makes sense. But yeah, going back to what I was trying to get you to say that you didn't say, I do remember you talking. So I guess my question is, can you re-explain, because I found it very interesting, the concept of fetuses experiencing trauma? And I think that has something to do with something fancy you were talking about.
Not necessarily fancy, but babies can experience trauma in the womb, just depending on how the mother is perceiving her world. So the environment with which the mother is developing is how the fetus will feed off of that mother. So if the mother is in anxious situations, then the fetus becomes an anxious fetus. And then is born with trauma. And the interesting thing about trauma is that it sets inside of our bodies. So although a baby can't speak, that baby is holding onto that experience. just like, I'm sorry, babies that are adopted, or babies that are born and then the mother passes away suddenly, that child or that infant holds on to that grief, and they grieve because the connection with that person that they once had is not there. So although they don't have the words to say it, it's stored in the body, and then as they get older, it may surface as chronic illnesses or unmanageable behaviors where they can't self-regulate.
I mean, like, you did just kind of say it, so I guess it's related to children that get adopted or kidnapped as well.
Yeah. So children that are kidnapped at an early age, they may not remember. They grow up to forget the paternal parent, but something within their system remembers that parent. Sometimes you see it on movies where they meet somebody and they're like, I think I know you. That's because that memory is still stored, but they don't have the language for it because they didn't have the language for it when they were taken.
Oh, that's cool. Sorry, guys, if you heard excess noise, my dog has decided to go on a walkabout up and down, constantly clicking her nails and shaking her body. I don't know. Specific, yeah, reason. So it might be a bit noisy in the background. With you actually talking about emotions or feelings surfacing as chronic illness, I am just coming to terms with that process and actually understanding that it is a thing that illnesses and diseases can come about due to your feelings and your emotions.
Yeah, especially with grief, when it gets stuck in the body, it manifests as autoimmune diseases, or it can even manifest as cancer sometimes. So our body, there is actually a book. McNiff has a book. It's called The Body Keeps Score, and it's perfectly true. The body is like those tree stumps that have the rings on it. The body keeps a memory of everything that happens. And even if you don't have the language for it, it's somewhere in your body. You might have back pains or shoulder pains and find that you have the extra tense or headaches and things like that. So even inflammation is part of a trauma experience. Not to say, though, that when these things happen, they're not valid. They're not valid medical reasons for them happening. But most of the time, they can be linked back to a traumatic event.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I would, since this is a half and half, I would relate it back to the natural world and saying that it's the same response that animals have, and they just instinctively know that, you know, something needs to be done, or it's time to migrate, or this is how I live life. It's a similar thing. So on that note, I did have another question. So in terms of that process of your emotions and feelings sometimes manifesting in diseases, what's your thoughts? Well, I guess, would you suggest that patients see a doctor as well as a therapist or psychiatrist as part of the treatment?
Definitely. In my intakes, I always ask about psychosomatic symptoms. Those are the symptoms that are out in your body. And when I say psychosomatic, it's sort of like when somebody comes around you and they start coughing and then you go away and you kind of feel like you have a sore throat as well. Those are the things that that's psychosomatic. So I often ask those questions, and I ask about the history of their health as well. And sometimes I do work closely with pediatricians or family doctors to kind of make sure that what I'm doing is in parallel to any medications or any treatment that the client might be in at the time, so that we can work together and help the client.
Okay. Very interesting, and yeah, definitely something, as well as my second question, to maybe start normalizing Western medicine and mental health practices working alongside each other. I feel like two birds, one stone, might as well. And I think, not necessarily my last question, but the last topic I wanted to touch on within this was a bit of a broad one. In terms of perception and the society that we function in, and mental health, I know it's something that, like I said, it's not something that's readily available or talked about, more so in the younger generation coming up, because we have the freedom to do that now, thankfully. But within the older generations and kind of how they've groomed their children and so on and so forth, it's hard for me to find my words sometimes to kind of really describe that one question, but what is your perception on the mental health and how it's just not necessarily a thing sometimes, or it's a word. What is that word? Not necessarily prioritized, but I had it and then it left. It's one of those situations where you see the word in your head and then when you go to say it, it disappears. You can. So, I mean, everything that we just talked about. So the perception of mental health and how it's perceived.
I think I know where you're going. And it's a cultural thing. Yeah. So there are some cultures that with open arms accept working with their mental health. And there are other cultures that feel like people or the person that's working with them is just being nosy and wants to know about their personal life. So it's not about breaking the stigma. It's more about making the client feel accepted and heard, seen and heard, because that's all people really want anyway. It's just to be seen and heard, and to have how they're feeling or what they're going through validated. And once that's done, then it's not even about the process of seeking therapy. It's about, I'm going to go and just feel validated, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think you picked out the word that I was looking for, the stigma. So, yeah, but it's just a difficult.
Yeah, some cultures are very open. Especially young people that I've spoken to, there are a group of young people that talk about it. Like, everybody has one. Everybody has a psychologist. Everybody has a therapist. and they just openly say, oh, I'm going to my therapist this afternoon. Don't see my psychologist this afternoon, and it's okay. And there are other groups that tend to not even mention it or just don't even have an idea of what a therapist or a psychologist would do for them. And they just kind of feel like it's somebody that's trying to poke in the business.
Okay. Is it also a gender thing, or is it?
I find that with adults, women will seek therapy more than men will. Men tend to feel as if seeking therapy is a sign of weakness. And also in different professions, certain professions, although they should require their employees to seek therapy, they don't, because the profession is more of a masculine profession. So they avoid it altogether. And then there are others that are open to it. So I definitely see more women seeking therapy than men.
Would you care to highlight on those professions or not necessarily?
I would say it's the helping profession. Most policemen, most firemen. And I'm not saying it's all around either, because some people will listen to this and be like, oh, that's not true. But they are the ones that are supposed to protect and serve, right? So they, in order, a sign of show of weakness is a sign that you're not doing your job right. Soldiers, especially, I've worked with vets at one point, and they are also quite reluctant to take part in a therapeutic session.
Okay. That's actually quite an insight. Yeah. I do know as well that a lot of this stuff that we've talked about now is probably stuff that people already know or are quite familiar with. However, as I said before, it's just the beginning of a conversation to kind of get our foot in the door and just, you know, have the conversation about it, because it is something where we can start asking these questions and becoming more comfortable with it. Remember, it's balance within yourself. So in order to do that, sometimes we have to dig a bit deeper and deal with those difficult parts that we don't necessarily want to address, and you know, dig back to childhood, because I mean, I would say it all kind of stems from that.
Most of our trauma comes from childhood, but then you can also have an event that just kind of comes out of nowhere and, you know, kind of takes you off your feet. So
it's just to have these conversations. And I would say that's what the therapist or psychiatrist is there for, so that you can have that comfort when you start to dig into those difficult things that we don't necessarily want to. Because it's not easy, but it's definitely highly recommended. And I saw a meme the other day that said, people that go to therapy because of the people that don't want to go to therapy. Something like that, yeah.
Well, that's actually what happens with children. Most of the children that I see are in therapy because of the adults in their life, which is quite sad, I think. It's very sad. And I feel like this generation of children are probably going to be the most connected to their emotions in the future than any other generation that we've had, because they are working on emotions that the adults in their lives have never worked on before. So that's why I now make a requirement that if I'm working with a child under the age of 16, that the family has to have at least 2 or 3 family sessions as well, so that we can find out what the root cause is. And it actually helps improve the entire family's space within their world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And do you see reluctance or like resistance from the parents?
Definitely, especially the fathers, there's definitely resistance. But because and this is where art therapy comes into play, where it makes therapy a lot easier to swallow, because once they start engaging, they forget that they're actually in a therapeutic relationship with me. And we kind of hit the areas that need to be hit faster than talk therapy.
And is that all creative therapy or just?
Yeah, that would be all creative therapy. There's music, there's dance, there's drama.
Yeah, the therapist that my mom had me seeing was a drama therapist, and she was absolutely amazing. Like I said, very difficult, and I miss her dearly. But it was a very, very wonderful process, and I found it way easier than talk therapy. Yeah.
It's less invasive, and and then you're able to access a lot quicker.
Right. So I think that's everything. Definitely some stuff that we can further talk on, but we're not going to make this too long. Thank you, Rochelle, for having, would you just give the people information of your website and your social media handles?
I am on Instagram and Facebook at CAF.BDA, CAF Bermuda. And the website is CAFBermuda.com. And email is info@CAFBermuda.com. So it's quite easy.
Cool. Sounds good. So upcoming plans to kind of expand to family therapy.
We're looking to go into family therapy. We are in the process of providing wraparound services for a few educational institutions on the island. And one of the helping services, we'll be providing wraparound services with them as well. So although we definitely don't work in a silo, there are other institutions or departments that we work with. And provide. When I say wraparound service, it means that they are getting another service somewhere else, but my service supports that service. So it's similar to working with the doctor's office as well. So I might be working alongside a probation officer or an addiction counselor or a social worker. And these services together are called wraparound services to make sure that you're treating the whole child and the whole family.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to ask you to elaborate on wraparound service. Okay. All right, that sounds good. So thank you, Rochelle.
Thank you, Kaya.
for being a part of this podcast. She is my first guest, so kind of her to take time out of her day.
Accosted me.
I did accost to her. Right, so you will be hearing from Rochelle again. It's always wonderful to have a open conversation about mental health. And I, as you guys know, it is something that I have been working on a lot lately to heal through my traumas and kind of reach that next step. So thankfully, I have been doing well in that process with no help from my mother, but still guidance as I talk to her. Sometimes it also is helpful because I would have a conversation with her about a session I just had with somebody, and her reassurance that what they're doing is the correct process is what makes me feel comfortable without giving out, you know, details and stuff, because sometimes I might have to talk about her, which is fine. It's all in health and healing process. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that I wanted to kind of mention, and something else that I've recently come to terms with that I didn't realize before and I didn't address before, is that it's not necessarily that your parents or whoever intended to cause the trauma.
Ooh, that's a good one. I thought we was finishing. That is a good one, because parents only parent from where they know best. And that's basically, they parent based on their background. And we don't always get it right. Sometimes Kaya's told me I've done something that wasn't quite what she had expected or things like that. And we don't get it right. But we parent from a place where we know best. And some people might be sitting there now and saying, oh my gosh, I definitely resonate with that. Because your parent may have parented you differently than how you're parenting your child. And yeah, so we only do what we know. And you can't fault people for that. And you can't shame people for that, because they're only doing their best based on the paradigm that they're coming from.
And it's that concept of you have to remember that your parents are also human and they're also growing as well, because you know, as humans, we make mistakes and we're still not perfect. You're still all finding yourself. So just because you have a child doesn't mean that that process stops.
Yeah.
It just means you got somebody else tagging along with you.
Your broke best friend.
Yeah, so that's about it. I'm going to wrap this up now. So thank you, Tech Family. If you guys aren't already following the Instagram and Facebook as well, is choice.era for Instagram and Facebook. And then the website is up and running, as we know, and it's www.choiceara.com. All of it will be in the description as well. You can follow me on social media on my personal handle, which is at Amor_0811. It's Amor with 2 R's, AMORR _0811. I think that's it. So thank you for having the conversation, and I will see you guys in the next episode. Talk to you later.